Hey there, are you sitting down? Good, because Wayfair's end of season sale is here, and you can shop it from your couch. It's Wayfair's Labor Day clearance, and it's on now. Right now, you can score up to 70% off everything home at Wayfair, like up to 50% off outdoor furniture and decor, and up to 70% off area rugs, plus amazing doorbuster deals, and 24-hour surprise flash deals on Wayfair home finds in every style. And get it all with fast shipping on everything right to your door. From furniture to faucets, this is your last chance of the season to score huge deals at Wayfair. Don't let the final days of summer pass you by without shopping these end-of-season savings. So don't wait. Like summer, these savings won't last. Head to Wayfair.com today to score up to 70% off everything home. Celebrate your holiday weekend with can't-miss savings before they run out. Shop Wayfair's Labor Day clearance now through September 2nd at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
What if one vague word cost you your entire reputation and you didn't even see it coming? You mind if I share a short story with you? I want to tell you about this young project manager on his first big assignment. He had the title. Of course, he had the authority and a deep sense of responsibility. His goal was very simple: deliver the project on time and prove he was capable. In a key status meeting, his lead engineer, a brilliant but very quiet woman, said a critical integration was looking a little bit tricky. The PM, eager to project confidence, heard the word tricky and thought, okay, a small challenge? Oh, we can handle that. But a week later, that tricky integration had brought the entire project to a grinding halt. When he finally dug in, he learned that a word a bit tricky was her professional understanding of saying that third-party API is failing 50% of the time and the entire foundation is definitely unstable. See, he had listened to the word, but he had completely missed the data. He had the responsibility, but failed to use his power to seek true understanding. Therefore, he had a powerful transformation. He realized that the words like tricky, soon, or almost done are just static. The real power, the real responsibility, it lies in asking the right questions to uncover the truth. He learned to stop just hearing the words and actually start hunting for the data. Habit number one, listen for data, not for words. Again, listen for data, not words. Team members may speak in generalities or emotional language, but successful, effective project managers focus on quantifiable facts and outcome. They listen for signals, not just the surface level phrases. So your goal in every conversation is to find that underlying facts, constraints, and most of all, dependency. See, family, this is important because decisions based on opinions fail. Decisions based on data succeed. This habit prevents misunderstanding. It exposes hidden risk. It forces accountability by grounding all conversation in an objective reality, not just a subjective interpretation. Experiment with these actionable tips. Ask questions that force more of it to be more specific. What do I mean by that? For example, when you say soon, what is that date? What specific data led you to that conclusion? See, the whole concept there is we want to get to more of a quantifiable type response. All right. Number two, repeat back the factual core of what you heard. Here's an example. To confirm, that deliverable is blocked because the API key has not been received, correct? Here's another one. Ignore blame language. For example, he didn't versus reframing it is the key was not delivered. And then I'll probably go into this a little bit later in a more deep detail about how it's important to focus on the deliverable or action instead of the individual. All right, habit number two. Look at the project schedule first, not your inbox. I'll tell you, I've been guilty of this time and time again. The first thing I would want to do is look at my inbox. But see, your inbox is a list of other people's priorities and sometimes even their problems. So your project schedule is the source of truth for your mission. Starting your day in the inbox means you begin more of in a reactive and a defensive posture. Starting with the schedule means you begin in a position of command, focus on critical path and the day's objectives. See, this single habit dictates whether you control the day or, let's be honest, or the day controls you. Why is this important? This sets the strategic tone for your entire day. It ensures your mental energy is immediately applied to project momentum, various analysis, not to distracting low-value communication. It is the foundational discipline of being proactive and result, or I like to say outcome-driven leader. Experiment with these actionable tips. Time block the first 15, maybe even 30 minutes of your day. We'll call it a schedule and strategy. Ooh, I like that. See, what I like about that is if you treat it as a non-negotiable meeting with yourself, this sets you up for success. Next point. Note tasks and deadlines for the next 48 hours, what action is required. And the last and final one, use what you learn from your schedule to triage what you'll say yes to in your inbox and what you'll put away for at a later time. Habit number three, focus on a solution, not who's to blame. I told you we'll come to this. See, when failure occurs, blame is the worthless byproduct. What I mean by that, it wastes time. It definitely destroys psychological safety. And it solves nothing. See, the goal is to understand the systematic cause and implement a correction to ensure it cannot happen again. Your job is to be a mechanic for project success, not a judge of his people. Why is this important, family? See, a no-blame culture doesn't mean no accountability. What it means is accountability is focused on fixing the process, not punishing the person. This also encourages team members to report problems early, often, and being honest, which is critical to risk mitigation. Experiment with these actionable tips. Immediately steer conversations away from the who and towards and more to the what and how. For example, ask, what can we do right now to get this back on track? Next point, conduct blameless focus reviews on timelines of event, not the people. And the last and final one, produce a short list of concrete, actionable process changes as the sole output of any failure analysis meeting. Habit number four, own your effective communication on updates. See, communication is not, I repeat, it is not about keeping people informed. It's about controlling the project narratives and managing stakeholders' expectations. If you're not proactively, concisely, and consistently communicating, you are allowing stakeholders to invite their own, often mostly incorrect, stories about the project health. Why is this important, family? This is important because this builds trust and confidence, and it prevents political maneuvers, and it ensures your project is perceived as being under control and someone that is leading it with a competent control. It also allows you to deliver bad news on your terms and allows you to frame it with a mitigation plan. Experiment with these actionable tips. Implement what we like to call a three-point briefing. What is a three-point briefing? First of all, in a three-point briefing, you want to identify what does that frequency look like? Is this a three-point briefing going to be daily, every other day, or weekly? And how I would unpack this is, here's my 3 points. First point is key accomplishments. Next one, next immediate goal, and the last and final, current top risk. Again, key accomplishments, next immediate goal, and current top risk. What this does for you, family, it allows you to keep it short and concise and keep everyone abreast of what's going on. Okay, next point. Know what each stakeholder truly cares about. They care about, I'll tell you what they care about. They care about cost. They care about the scope. They care about the timeline. And most of all, they care about the reputation. So tailor your updates to that currency. And then last and final one, for any red or yellow status, never present the problem without also presenting your proposed solution or action plan. Habit number five, get a pulse check. I'm checking my pulse from the quietest person. This right here, I should call a message on this. You want to call me? Let's call message. So if you're new to the episode, anytime that I call a message, this is a point you want to pay attention to. I put it later in the habits because I want who's ever paying attention to put this in there, meaning pulse check. See, when you have someone that's quiet in a room, in any group meeting, the most vocal people often dominate the conversation, but the quietest person, they frequently hold the most valuable, unfiltered observation. They are more introverted, maybe even a junior, or may simply be processing on a deeper level, and directly and respectfully soliciting their input is a powerful intelligence gathering tool. Why is this important? See, this practice uncovers risks. It reveals team dissent or confusion, and it fosters more of an inclusive environment where all insights are valued. See, the quietest person often sees the flaws in the plan that everyone kind of looks over in their rush to agree has been missed. So experiment with these actionable tips. I call this the check-in. Let me tell you why I like the check-in. See, during a meeting, say, Sarah, we haven't heard from you yet. What are your thoughts on whatever the thing is on this? Next point, one-on-one collaboration. If they're hesitant to speak in a group, follow up with them on a one-on-one immediately after the meeting. And the last and final one, this is my favorite of them all. This is what I do. I live by this. I die by this until I find a different solution. I call this the around the world. Why do I call it around the world? See, I make a habit to go around the room, whether we're on a call or in a conference room, especially on major decisions. And it gives everyone a dedicated slot to actually speak. Habit number six, remove unnecessary meetings or processes. If you paid attention to yesterday's episode, I talked about meetings. And one thing about meetings, reports, or processes, they kind of can lose their original purpose and continue to exist without adding value. And what that happens is they drain time and energy. See, your job as a leader is to be ruthless editor of inefficiency, actively, and I mean actively hunting for and eliminating one low value activity each week. We also like to eliminate what we also call this MUDA. See, MUDA is where basically removing waste is a lean terminology. We'll talk about that because you'll have meetings just a meeting. There's no value being extracted from the meeting. So this is important because this frees up your team's time and your own for high value work. It demonstrates the commitment to operational excellence and empowers your team to question legacy processes. You know, I always talk about legacy processes, and if you don't, then you will know now. One thing about legacy processes is when no one can articulate the why we're doing this or how it's going to make the team better or give the organization better value, we need to find out ways to slowly, of course, unless we can move faster to get rid of it because it's not adding any value. And also I want to talk about there is, it's important, family, when you make an observation on a legacy process that you don't go in right away to try and change it. You want to work with individuals. You want to collaborate in a way. You don't want to go on a silo mission. Okay, I digress. So let me get you to your actionable tips I'd love for you to experiment with. Challenge every reoccurring meeting on your calendar. Ask the question, is this meeting still providing value equal to the cost of everyone that is attending the actual meeting? The next one, ask your team, if you could eliminate one report or maybe even one administrative task, what would it be and why? And the last and final one, run an experiment. Cancel a meeting for a week or two and see if anything negative actually happens. If not, cancel it permanently. See, we have to understand we're constantly looking ways to add value back to the team, add value back to the organization. And we have to look at things that where we're taking away the team from doing what they've been called to do. And that's actually deliver on the product or service that has been asked of us based on this project. Habit number seven, reconfirm stakeholder expectations. Stakeholder needs and priorities are not static. I repeat, stakeholder needs and priorities are not static. What do you mean by this, ED? I mean that they shift with the market pressures or internal politics or even new information, assuming the expectations defined and kicked off are still valid after 3 months later, may be a critical error. You must regularly and explicitly reconfirm the definition of success. Why is this important? This prevents the catastrophic big reveal at the end of the project where the deliverable, while matching their original spec, no longer meets the stakeholders' actual need. It's up to us to keep the project aligned with the business value and protect it from late stage scope creep. Experiment with these actionable tips. And your regular stakeholder updates include the question, has anything changed in your business context that affects what you need from this project? Next one, periodically present a one-page summary of the project, or we'll say definition of done, and ask for explicit sign-off, even mid-project. And the last and final one, family, when a stakeholder makes a offhand comment, or a new request, follow up with this. That's an interesting point. Let's clarify how that fits with our agreed upon objective of whatever that is. Habit number eight, maintain your informational edge. Your value is not just managing or leading projects, but it's the expertise you bring to the next one. complacency, it's a career killer. Dedicating discipline, focused time daily to studying new methodologies, competitor movements, and industry trends is not a luxury. It's a requirement for maintaining your authority and strategic value. We talk about this now about AI, where I remember when I first came into this thing that I love, that I hope you fall in love with, called project management, how we had to build schedules compared to now. You can leverage AI to build a schedule. I can leverage AI to write a charter for me, but that I had to learn that. So this is important because informational edge allows you to anticipate risk, identify opportunity, and challenge assumption with credible data. It's what separates a task manager from a strategic leader. Stakeholders trust a PM who understands the broader context with for each project as it exists. Experiment with these actionable tips. Replace social media or news scrolling with industry newsletter. Small caveat, the project management lab newsletter will be coming. You want to make sure you get aligned with that. The PMI, really good industry-specific publications. Next point, listen to relevant businesses or tech podcasts during your commute or workout instead of music. If you're listening to this via podcast or on any of the other mediums, I applaud you because you are really investing in yourself. And the last and final one, identify one, and I do mean one, new idea or technique per week and spend about 15 minutes assessing how it could be used to on your current project. Well, family, if you stayed this long, first of all, I truly appreciate it. We uncovered several powerful habits today, but the goal isn't just to know them, it's to execute on them. Information without action is simply entertainment. So my challenge to you is this. Don't just add another podcast to your queue or another newsletter to your inbox. See, that's passive learning. And if you're listening to me, I know you're not a passive learner. I'm asking you to be an active practitioner. Starting tomorrow, I want you to convert information into ammunition. What does that look like? When you read an article, ask, how can I leverage this on my project today? If you're transitioning into project management, how can I start building out my PM, as we call toolbox? So when you identify a new technique, just don't file it away. Spend 15 minutes figuring out how to apply it to your biggest problem this week. See, the gap between an average project manager and an elite one is the gap between knowing and actually doing. Listen, family, I can't make it any simpler. Your career is defined by your actions, not your library. Go and execute. If you're new here, I go by the name AED. For all you smart and intelligent folks out there, that just simply means it. Until next time.